Well, Kieran O'Reilly, you're the Superior General
of the Society of African Missions.
It's an order that goes back to when?
We were founded in 1856 in France, in Lyon. Our founder was Melchior de Myriam Bresiac, with the specific aim of going to the most abandoned in Africa.
Father, my first question regards the African continent. I believe there are over 50 nations in this continent. They're very different realities. Would you say there's a uniting element between the people there? Is there an African identity?
Well, now, I think that's a real very difficult question to answer because of the many different ethnic groups, the reality of the way the countries were formed in history, for instance, after the Congress of Berlin, the colonial history put nations of peoples together that were not together for centuries, that had their own different kind of identity. You have the whole series of countries along the Maghreb, the north of Africa. Then you have the countries in sub-Saharan Africa, and you move down into southern eastern Africa. So it's very difficult to speak, from my mind, without kind of insulting the diversity and the richness that exists in Africa and the huge number of ethnicities, ethnic groups, languages, cultural fabric that has kind of grown up over centuries.
Speaking in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, last spring, Benedict XVI highlighted how the church's essential role in Africa was to present Jesus Christ as the one redeemer and thus enhance African traditions and correct and perfect their concept of life, humanity and the family. Your order began evangelizing in colonial times, as you just mentioned, when Western traditions or cultural models were imposed on Africans. Has this changed?
Indeed, we were part, I suppose, of that great movement of Europe into Africa in the 1840s, 50s and 60s. We first went there in the late 1850s. So invariably we're associated, especially along West Africa, where we began, Nigeria, the Benin Republic, Sierra Leone. We're associated with the French and the British colonial movement of that time. And invariably our missionaries were children of their own theological time, with the view that you brought the faith, you converted people to salvation in Jesus Christ in order to save them from eternal damnation. And mission theology, I suppose, has grown and has been heavily influenced by our presence in these countries and by, in fact, our deepening knowledge of the peoples with whom we lived and worked. Initially, obviously, when somebody comes to a strange shore, they don't know anything other than what they bring themselves. So it takes a number, perhaps, of generations before they begin to fully understand the peoples, the very rich fabric of their own cultural framework and makeup, the understanding of the dynamic that runs either the social, the political, the economic within the society that they work. And I think part of our missionary thrust, perhaps not the dominant part, but from the beginning, has been to try and, if you like, codify for ourselves a better understanding of the peoples and the cultures we moved into bring the gospel to. One of the first ways that we as a society had done this was through the establishment of schools, believing, and it's still the case, that education is the key to all forms of true cultural development in every kind of way. Subsequently, we were able to develop that along the lines of small clinics, then eventually into hospitals, education and that kind of thing. So our process of, if you like, integration is slow. Our concern, first of all, is for the well-being of the people who gathered around us. And very often when we began our mission stations, we had very few people. It may have taken 10, 15, 20 years before small communities really began to grow. And it was perhaps only in the 1900s that numbers began to become significant in the churches along West Africa, at least where we established communities. And as I said, one of our tasks is to learn and to journey with our own people then. Gradually, priests came, we have bishops, so they bring their own richness and their theological understanding of the reality of Jesus Christ. So we are still bringing the message of Jesus Christ, but we are now bringing it very much in dialogue with the cultures of the people that we are living and working with and that we have been fortunate to work with for so long. So you're not imposing anymore a model, say, from outside, which was by very fact that people came on boats from outside, you brought it with you. We are now actually working with the local hierarchies, the theologians, the people, the lay communities, in understanding what, if you like, is the reality of Christ as an African face. Christ, my brother and my sister, my father and my brother, my uncle, who are Africans. And that is a great challenge. And I suppose for a society like my own, it has moved even further in that we are now welcoming members from the local churches where we were missionaries to be missionaries with us in other parts of Africa. So they have a major part to contribute, if you like, to this growing unraveling of the mystery of the identity of Christ in Africa now, 2 centuries after it came, let us say, in the new movement into Africa. Okay, there was a previous movement down the west coast in the 15th and 16th century, and there was a much earlier movement in the early Roman times and in the collapse of Rome along North Africa. But our own time now is marked by missionaries who are from Africa, who are young, who are full of energy, who bring to their own continent this richness that is Jesus Christ.
What about the role of other religions, traditional African religions? What kind of a role do they play in achieving reconciliation, justice and peace?
They play a very important role, really. I think in many areas you now have joint kind of committees. As always, of course, the mainline churches and groups have no problem coming together. Invariably, it is the fringe groups or the fanatics in all our Christian or Islam or whatever it is who are the most problematic at this. But everybody, first of all, and I mean, in Africa, you can see the most beautiful continent, the geographic diversity, the beauty of the mountains, the beauty of the rivers, the unimaginable beauty as you rise to see a sunset, or as you get up in the morning to see the sunrise, my goodness, over the forest in Central Africa, over Lake Victoria in Tanzania. You realize the beauty of nature that they have there, and yet we're very conscious of the damage that's been done to all of that. But we are all there as human beings. It doesn't matter whether you're a traditional African worshipper or you're a follower of Islam or you're a Jehovah Witness or you're a Catholic. All of us rise to look at the same sunrise. So we all together share the suffering when that sunrise is damaged through pollution or poisoning of our waters. So our very common humanity binds us, if you like, first of all, to strive for an environment and a world that honours the dignity of all of us who live in that place. But what's more than that, guarantees it and guarantees its beauty into the future.
Well, seeing as you've spoken about beauty, do you think there'll be any good news stories coming out of this synod?
Oh, there will. To me, the big news story, of course, always from Africa is Africa's people. And the people and their warmth and their friendship. And, you know, I think maybe industrially Africa hasn't given an awful lot to the rest of the world. But if the rest of the world was only willing just to receive a bit of the warmth and the friendship and the kindness and the love that Africans do give and can give, I think it would be very positive. They have a tremendous sense of people. They're very much focused on people, family, community, village, ethnic group, tribe, nation, whatever it is. And they have a great sense of courtesy, regard for each other. Sometimes people say, but that belies all the wars. Wars are about greed, wars about selfish, wars about distortion. And I think that's where we Catholics, Christians come into play to try and make well, to restore in order to give back, if you like, the richness of African cultures that had survived with a very intricate fabric, if you like, as I would call it, of life support over centuries before Europe came in there.
You mentioned Europe again. Cultural models that come from the West, are they present there? Have they led this continent down the path of materialism and relativism and away from these traditional values?
Well, human nature is human nature everywhere, you know, and whether I'm somebody from Lagos or I'm somebody from Cork in Ireland, I'm a human being and I want to have what I can have. I like to have a car and I like to have a house and I want to go on a holiday. So human nature is human nature everywhere. I suppose what matters is how we integrate this consumerism into the realities. And if Africa has been under huge pressure, as it has, for instance, with the sweeping urbanization in the last 30 to 40 years that has occurred, some of it out of control, then it's very difficult for ordinary people to resist the pressures of consumerism. Everywhere in Africa I go now, even the most remote places, they're all watching CNN, they're watching Sky, they're watching France 24. The world is there in their small sitting room. Furthest in the middle of Africa, They're all watching what's happening in America, Asia. We have to accept that that is the reality. And like all human beings, they like and they see what they want. And so consumerism is a reality that's going to be just always part. And then again, you have a huge market there. So you have international companies very happy to be able to sell their goods into an African continent that's waiting to receive them. The problem is, it doesn't very often have the resources to pay for them. So they borrow against future earnings, either from the mines or from some other resources, with the result that, you know, maybe the money doesn't always go where it should, to education, health. So, like, consumerism is a reality. It's just human beings everywhere looking at the same and wanting it. Now, how you integrate that then into the reality of your own cultural background, of being able to, if you like, wisely judge how you should or should not spend. But look at the craziness that's happened in our world here in Europe and America, where our bankers, whom we thought were somebody, became just loose gamblers, you know, and have led to the ruin of many good people who entrusted them with their money. So, you know, human nature and original sin seems to be very widespread.